very good Tuesday night to everybody. Welcome here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens here with you. Just heard Dan Day with the update. He's on the other side of the glass. The two of us will be taking you up until 10 o'clock this evening. As if you want to get involved in the conversation, as always, you can do so via the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22, 560-22. Of course, we've got a lot to talk about in the world of the NBA Finals, the Kevin Durant injury, all of that. We're going to talk some Dolphins football with Adam Beasley coming up at 6:40. So that's in about 35 minutes. We'll get to that. And then, I want to get into the Women's World Cup as well. I got my USA jersey on right now. So it is an exciting day. Lots of things to get into. But let's start with last night's game. Of course, you know by now the Warriors stayed alive with that 106-105 victory over the Raptors in Game 5 as Toronto now leads 3-2. Steph Curry goes for 31, Klay Thompson added 26. And you look at the way that game ended, Golden State does so with a 9-2 run to conclude the contest after a Kawhi Leonard 10 straight point, just absolute unbelievable performance on his part. It seemed like he was going to take the game over and win the NBA Finals for the Raptors. He did the 10 straight points on his own with a minute and 45 span off the clock. And with 3:28 remaining, he gave Toronto a 103-97 lead and all the momentum in the world. It looked like he was going Toronto's way. But give credit where credit is due, the Golden State Warriors, they come up with three consecutive three-pointers on their possessions where you see Steph Curry and Klay Thompson a couple of times there. And over the last 20 seasons, you take a look, teams were 3-92 when trailing by at least 6 points with 3 minutes left in the game. And the Warriors obviously bucked that trend. And I want to get into the inexplicable timeout by Nick Nurse and all of that. We'll talk about that, and I really want to delve into it, but it's amazing. Like, the NBA Finals took a different turn last night, and it's been a terrific series so far. But today, outside of a brief mention of what actually happened as far as the result, everything has surrounded this Kevin Durant injury, which casts a huge shadow over this game, over the series, over NBA free agency that's coming up in 2019 this summer. So let's start there, because Durant departed with 9:46 to go in the second quarter. He played 12 minutes, scored 11 points, was 3-for-3 from downtown. And he looked great early on. I mean, you saw a video of him in the tunnel dancing, doing his pregame routine, alley-oop dunk in warmups. He was undercut by Serge Ibaka at one point and bounced right up, seemingly showing no ill effects of the calf strain that had kept him out for over a month. He was sinking shots from all over. It looked like he was the same Kevin Durant that we have all become accustomed to see dominate, especially with his scoring and all that he can do on that offensive end of the floor. It looked like he didn't miss a beat. And then everything changed with 9:46 to go in the second quarter. And, you know, we talk about this injury. I mean, major credit to Kevin Durant for attempting to play in this game and ultimately playing well while he was in the game. But this appears it was an extremely costly decision on his part. And Warriors general manager Bob Myers did say that Durant will have an MRI coming up today. We do not have the results of that yet. And I don't believe they're going to have any media availability till tomorrow because everybody's traveling today back to the West Coast for the next game. But league sources told ESPN's Ramona Shelburne and Adrian Wojnarowski that the Warriors believe the MRI will confirm an Achilles tear. So that is obviously really, really disheartening news for everybody out there. If you're a fan of sports and enjoy high-level competition, this is really disappointing. For someone like me, who has been an avid person against Kevin Durant, I've been rooting against the Golden State Warriors, even I really feel bad about this one. I mean, you feel terrible for a guy in Kevin Durant who is one of the great players in the game, and whether you like the fact that he joined the Warriors a few years ago or not, that's really separate from this. The fact of the matter is you've got one of the top three players in the entire world, and he's going to be out for what appears to be probably an entire season, and that's just disappointing. It's disheartening. And you take a look at the background of this. You know, prior to last night, he hadn't played since he injured his right calf on May 8th against the Rockets in the Western Conference semifinals. He had initially been ruled a game-time decision after going through the practice on Sunday and the shoot-around earlier in the day yesterday. But Warriors coach Steve Kerr said before the game that Durant would play without any restrictions. That was stunning to me that all of a sudden the guy hasn't played in over a month and he's not going to have any minutes restriction on him. And, you know, you take a look at what happened in Bob Myers' explanation, which we'll hear from Bob Myers in a little bit because we've got that audio for you. But, you know, some of this stuff just doesn't seem to add up completely. Now, as background on this, Durant did take to Instagram after the game and said, quote, "I'm hurting deep in the soul right now. I can't lie. But seeing my brothers get this win was like taking a shot of tequila. I got new life. LOL." End quote. Now, here's the thing. Let's be realistic about this. If Kevin Durant did not play in last night's game or did not appear in the NBA Finals, there would have been people who criticized him. There would have been doubters out there that would be willing and ready to critique him and to put him down because he did not attempt to play on the game's grandest stage. But as we learned, there was obviously a chance of not only re-injuring himself but also escalating that injury. He sacrificed his health for the team. And I'll be honest, I've been involved in this conversation because, you know, when you're on the radio pretty much on a daily basis and you've got the ongoing saga of an NBA Finals or any playoff series, but especially when it gets to this point at the end of the season and everything matters so much, the stakes are so high, legacies on the line, this is a conversation that a lot of people in markets throughout the country, throughout the world who love the NBA have been discussing. Is Durant, what's his motivation here? Is this a situation where he's clearly looking ahead to free agency and wants to maintain his health? Is this a situation where he's just simply not healthy enough and there's good reason for him not to appear? Is there a situation here where Kevin Durant isn't all in with his teammates and all this other stuff? And then on top of that, is this a situation in which Kevin Durant hears the criticism and may rush himself back too soon? Like, all of this is going on in the background because, and the NBA, in theory, loves it because the conversation surrounds the game. It helps the game, the popularity, more people tuning in. But all of this set a backdrop for what we saw last night. And as the game got going, you're like, man, Durant looks unbelievable. There was a thought in my mind that surfaced after he hit his third three-pointer as to why he hadn't come back sooner. And then, you know, all of that quickly washed away. And I think everybody, you know, it was a very sobering moment when you see him lay on the court there and grabbing at his Achilles. And it's like, oh, man, I mean, this looks as serious as it can be in terms of an injury in the NBA.
Greg, you and I talked about it before, and I think I'm with the majority of people. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell us how you feel, 560-22 on the text line. I was saying to you, I went from questioning his heart to having a whole lot of respect. He looked actually even happy that Golden State lost game one because he was needed. Now we're looking back on it and saying, wow, he was really happy for his teammates. He wanted to be out there. He risked his career almost, because we know these Achilles injuries, they can be giant killers. Kobe Bryant, Boogie Cousins has never been the same. Some people have never come back from this injury. So I'm very, very concerned, I would say, for Kevin Durant right now. And I actually respect him a lot for what he did last night. I went from thinking maybe he was all about himself, being selfish, to now being like, he's a true team player and a great basketball person.
Yeah, I do think that a lot of people's opinions have changed based on what's happened in a very, very brief period of time. But what to me is fascinating are all the background elements to this in terms of what we're now hearing emerge from various sources, from people in the know, the reporters. First thing, according to Rachel Nichols, last night on SportsCenter after the game, she spoke to Steve Kerr, and Steve Kerr apparently repeatedly told her after the game, like, he was just astonished and could not believe it, because doctors, according to Steve Kerr, said that there was no way that Kevin Durant could make the injury worse by playing. So he was under the impression that, yeah, I mean, it's a calf strain. This may, instead of escalating this situation, they just assumed, okay, yeah, maybe the calf will be sore afterwards, but they did not think that there was any risk of him having an injury like this one that could keep him out for what we're assuming will be so long. Now, even more interesting than that, I saw Jason Williams this morning on Get Up on ESPN, and he had an incredibly insightful point on Get Up. He says that there is a strong, solid relationship between Durant's camp and the Warriors, but the target all along, from Durant's camp's perspective, so Jason Williams, who's really tight with Durant and has some, you know, business tie-ins with him with the show they do for ESPN+, but he was reporting this morning that Durant's camp the target for them was a potential return in game five after the initial injury occurred in, you know, two series ago. They thought game five or game six of the NBA Finals would be realistic for him to return. He said the narrative has been poorly managed by the Warriors. Golden State allowing his potential return to linger out there game by game, day by day, quote, caused a lot of this chaos for narratives to be ran away with, end quote. That according to Jason Williams. So, you know, we take that a step further. What I was just saying before, is KD committed to his teammates? Is he the only one who's thinking about himself rather than the rest of the team? Joe Lacob, the owner, majority owner of the Warriors, went on Stephen A. Smith's radio show and said that KD would be back during the series. That adds extra pressure on him to return. So Durant clearly wanted to play, worked his butt off to get back on the court, but there is a sense that is now emerging from his camp that he felt rushed to do so. Like, he was rushing himself, but then there's also all this outside pressure. So imagine this. Like, again, I think that as a lot of people will blame the media, right? A lot of people will bring this up and say, hey, well, if all of this talk hadn't been out there that Durant wasn't fully focused on the team and fully committed to the team and all this other stuff, and then that narrative that was strewn about, I think pretty irresponsibly, that there was a better team without Kevin Durant just because they performed well against the likes of the Houston Rockets and the Portland Trailblazers. I mean, first of all, that's a joke of a conversation anyway, to say that a team is better without one of the top three players in the league, which is just patently ridiculous. But that aside, if you consider that if the Warriors had come out immediately and said, hey, listen, he's got a calf strain, we're expecting he's going to be out for 4 weeks, then at that point, yes, you will get the occasional question, how's Kevin Durant's recovery going, all this other stuff. But if 4 weeks is put out there immediately, it's like, all right, we got a month to work with here. Because I always view it this way, whether it be a basketball team, a football team, if you put out there, from an injury standpoint, a timeline that perhaps it's a little more generous, right? You add a little extra time, then that only benefits you, because if he comes back sooner, then it looks better for the team, looks better for the team medical staff, looks better for the player, obviously, that he was able to work his way back sooner. But in the case of the Warriors, it has been literally game by game. And there's an update from Steve Kerr seemingly between every single game. And so as that continues on, and it wasn't much of an issue when you win a series against the Rockets, when you sweep a series against the Portland Trailblazers, but now you get into a dogfight and you're down 3-1 against the Toronto Raptors, and suddenly it's like, well, what's going on? Either Steve Kerr's playing games with everybody, or maybe there's some disappointment that should set in from all of us, because Kevin Durant, we've been getting update on his status for weeks now, and he's still not back. It sets up an unrealistic expectation based on what was going on behind the scenes. And I do think what's going to emerge from this, and I heard this bandied about earlier this morning as this was the hot topic, is players, I think now routinely, if they weren't doing so before, will have their own doctors enter the equation to have multiple opinions on injuries. I know it's pretty common now, but I think we're going to see it even more so. They're making so much money, and the teams, at least perception-wise, and the Warriors overall have a good reputation, but the teams themselves, I think they're a bit compromised, right? Like, especially if you look at the Golden State Warriors side of things, they're viewing this, they may not have Kevin Durant for any longer than just this series. And they invested a lot. They gave up a lot. But, you know, it's been fruitful for them in terms of the championship runs that they've been on, five straight NBA Finals. Durant wasn't part of all of them, but you get my point. So I think this is a fascinating dynamic here, and we've got more insight into that. There are more reports that I want to share with everybody. Plus, we'll hear what Bob Myers said after the game when we come back. We're just getting started here. As Dan mentioned, the text line is 56022, Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. I'm curious where everybody resides on this, because this is the hot topic of the day, and there are some very, very interesting comments and reports that are out there. And you take a look at always wanting someone to blame. Not only going to hear from Bob Myers, we'll hear from Charles Barkley as well. Stay tuned here on 560 WQAM.
Radio.com.
We're back here on 560 WQAM. Hope everybody's doing well on this Tuesday night. Greg Likens here with you. Dan Day on the other side of the glass. We're going to take you up until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up next segment, Adam Beasley will join us, get his thoughts on the NBA Finals. Of course, some Miami Dolphins conversation as he's obviously produced some great work over the last week or so, resulting from some of the mini camp action that we saw for the Dolphins, as they are now done. They've got a little bit of break before training camp rolls around. So we'll talk to him coming up next segment. But getting back to this Kevin Durant conversation. All right, before we hear from Bob Myers and Charles Barkley, I did want to read this part of this report from Chris Haynes, Yahoo Sports. He said this, he had a long report, but among the things that stood out to me, it says, even though he was cleared for Game 5, Durant was not anywhere close to 100%, sources said. The individual workout sessions and the light practice session on Sunday could not simulate the rigors of an ultra-competitive championship game. So that certainly tells you something about his effort to get on the court despite not being 100%. I think we can all assume that he wasn't 100%. At the same time, now that we know the results of this injury, it makes you think a little bit more about the decision-making process. Now, with that being said, I want you to hear from Bob Myers, as Bob Myers, who runs the basketball operations for the Golden State Warriors, has gotten a ton of credit, and rightfully so, for putting together this team and, you know, helping draft the players that are some of the stars, you know, outside of Durant, who came via free agency. But this is what Bob Myers said last night when he announced the injury to the media.
It's an Achilles injury. I don't know the extent of it. He'll have an MRI tomorrow. Prior to coming back, he went through 4 weeks with our medical team, and it was thorough, and it was experts and multiple MRIs and multiple doctors, and we felt good about the process. He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision.
Okay, so, you know, he didn't go into too much detail there, but you hear him say it's a collaborative decision. You hear him say it was a very thorough process. I mean, making it clear, I mean, this isn't something that they would take lightly to get him back out on the court. And the collaborative part certainly is important to note because, you know, ultimately, Kevin Durant, if he's cleared, he's the one who ultimately has to decide. But if it's the entire group of what you would assume to be experts on this particular situation and topic, if they say, hey, you're good to go, then it's hard not to feel like that's the right thing to do. With that being said, you could not help but be moved by just how broken up Bob Myers was about this injury. Last night, he was adamantly defending Kevin Durant, but also clearly shaken up and emotional. Take a listen.
Let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball, and the people that questioned whether he wanted to get back to this team were wrong. And I'm not here to... He's one of the most misunderstood people. He's a good teammate. He's a good person. It's not fair. I'm lucky to know him.
Okay. And you could tell he was legitimately emotional. You could just hear that in his voice there. At the same time, I heard some cynical people say, hey, this is Bob Myers already not only trying to spin this a little bit, but also this is his effort to recruit Kevin Durant to stick around. I don't know if we get into that right now. I will say that I give him a lot of credit for coming out and taking responsibility, even though I don't think he needs to, but he's the leader of the basketball side of things. And so I think that's what the leader should do. At the same time, you know, I don't know if we legitimately have someone to blame here. And we can break this down, but we do always want to have someone to blame. And clearly, Bob Myers just said that. And I think that's why he wanted to, quote unquote, you know, maybe step in front of the shooter, right, and take the shot, take the bullet kind of thing. But, you know, I look at this a couple of different ways. The first part is there is an element to a medical staff or a coach or an organization needing to protect the player from himself. You always hear that. I hear that from the former football players I work with, especially in that sport where the injuries are more common and oftentimes can be more gruesome. At the same time, ultimately, it's the player's call, and you've got a superstar like a guy in Kevin Durant. If he doesn't feel right, then it's his call to say, hey, I don't think I should feel right. But it's hard not to also have this instinct, if you're him, to feel pressured by the situation, by the magnitude of the series and all of that. But I want you to hear what Charles Barkley had to say, because Charles Barkley, always outspoken, always entertaining. This is what he had to say when asked about whether there's someone to blame.
Oh, Green, I want to address something else before I answer your question.
Yeah.
You've been asking these guys all morning if there's somebody to blame.
Yes.
Yes, there is somebody to blame. The Golden State Warriors for putting KD out there. Listen, that was not right. You know, if you go back and look at the last 2 weeks, the article comes out, KD's worst nightmare, the Warriors are winning without him. Then you come out, you read the articles, the Warriors are really unhappy when KD won't risk his Achilles. They're frustrated with KD. Now this man has to be feeling some type of way. So I blame the Warriors for KD getting hurt, and I don't care what they say about it. They shouldn't have put that man out there. You know how I know it? Because he blew out his Achilles.
There you go. So Charles Barkley not mincing any words. He knows exactly who he's blaming, and he thinks the Warriors are responsible for this. Here's what I will say, that you know, Brian Windhorst spoke today. He's been on all the ESPN platforms. He said that very few people he spoke to before the game, so before the injury, felt it was a good idea for Durant to play last night. And the fact there was no minutes restriction, that just seems off, right? Like, that doesn't seem right that you've got a guy. Like, it's one thing to say he's on a minutes restriction, and then if he plays more minutes than everybody anticipates, it's like, well, you know, he felt fine. You know, in this case, no minutes restriction. He ultimately tears his Achilles. At least that's what's being reported. But I think Jalen Rose brought up a really, 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 really fascinating point. If you are going to take a look at the two stars, right, the two superstars from each team, there's multiple superstars on the Warriors, to be fair, but the best player on each team. Durant, when healthy, is the best player on the Warriors. Kawhi Leonard, of course, for the Raptors. Kawhi Leonard's rift with the Spurs was essentially with the training staff, if you remember. They cleared him to play. He didn't feel ready to play. Even when he returned, he only played 9 games and just said, no, but this is not right. Even though there was pressure from the Spurs, there were pressure from Tony Parker and some of the veterans on that roster to get him back out on the court, and he didn't get on the court, and it got to such a point that he felt like they were disrespecting him. They weren't trying to follow his needs, him understanding his body, that he forced his way out of town. On the other side, the exact contrast, the opposite, Durant trusted the staff in Golden State, and this is what happened. Now, it's oversimplifying things. We don't know all the details with Durant, but I do find that dichotomy fascinating in this series. To me, though, when you have Bob Myers coming out and saying, hey, I know you're going to blame somebody, he understands the way, you know, society works these days. Yes, we do look for somebody to blame. At the same time, I think he also completely understands how sensitive Kevin Durant is, which is something we all know about. Kevin Durant creates burner accounts. He's responding to teenagers who are calling him out on social media. Like, this has been a long time criticism that I and many other people have had of a guy who is in such an elevated position in our society and in sports. Clearly, just uber talented, is so terrific at his craft, also makes a ton of money, has so many resources at his disposal, seemingly would have all these cool people to hang out with if he choose to, all this other time to do all this other stuff that none of us could dream of in our lives, right? And yet he is taking the time to respond to folks on social media who clearly aren't anywhere near him in terms of what they have resource-wise at his disposal, talent-wise, all this other stuff. So bottom line is, we know Kevin Durant has heard all the narratives about him. And to me, this is probably less about the Golden State Warriors irresponsibly trying to rush him back out on the court. This is more about Kevin Durant buying into the narrative, one, that the Warriors are better without him, two, that he's not all in for his team, three, he's looking forward to free agency and is investing in himself, and he bought into it. He wanted to get back out on the court. All the reports say that he has been trying to speed up this process, and I think it's an admirable thing to do. I think Dan brought up a good point. We all have more respect for Kevin Durant after him trying to go out there and play, but ultimately, we can look at this as a case study on players needing to look out for themselves because, you know, if he didn't play, yes, the criticism would come. But he did play. He's injured, and it appears he's going to miss about a year. And I think we can all say now that we know what happened. The hindsight certainly is 2020, but with hindsight, looking back, it's like, man, KD, I wouldn't have blamed him if he didn't play.
But he was in an amazing pressure situation. All that you just announced, plus anyone that's ever played sports, you've lied and said, oh, I can go, when you know you can't go for a lot of reasons. Number one, you're taught that. Number two, what if you tell your coach you can't go and they say, you don't have heart, I'm not going to play you ever again? He's got the finals. He's got people reacting 24/7 on social media. It just looks like he was in just a terrible pressure situation that forced him back, obviously, earlier than he needed to be.
Yeah, and you understand the thinking behind it, and there's a lot of psychology involved there, let alone the physical part of it, but it's just really a shame. And we got a lot of texts rolling in here. 56022 Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. We'll get to those in the 7 o'clock hour because this is a hot topic to be sure. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Adam Beasley, not only about the Kevin Durant situation, because everybody's got an opinion on that, but also, of course, about the Miami Dolphins. Stay tuned here on 560 WQAM. There you go, a little Orange Crush. A couple Syracuse guys going to be doing some talking here on the radio in just a moment. Want to let you know that all guests appear on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Buy now and save at the all-new Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Greg Likens here with you on this Tuesday night as we welcome in Adam Beasley, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. You can follow him on Twitter, at Adam H. Beasley. Bees, how are you doing tonight?
I'm Greg. Great, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I suppose we should start. I do want to ask you about the NBA Finals. That's been the hot topic tonight, of course, but I saw on social media you posted some shots from Oakland Raiders minicamp. So you're out on the West Coast. How's everything treating you out there?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I'm in the Oakland airport right now. I'm about to board a flight. I'm going down to Orange County, checking out the Chargers tomorrow. And I'm looking at one of those newsstands. You know, they sell newspapers, sodas, chips, and nothing but Golden State Warriors gears adorning the front of the store, including one of those little neck roll things you use to sleep on the plane. So if you want me to bring you back some Golden State souvenirs, I'm in the right place to do it.
Okay. I think you and I are both on the same page about how we feel about that. But
I just want to put the offer out there.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. So yeah. Real quickly, since you were at Raiders camp today, didn't Richie Incognito, did you get you got a chance to see him then?
I saw him, did not get a chance to talk to him. He has been a member of the Oakland Raiders now for 2 weeks, and he is yet to be made available to the media. I was hoping to talk to him today. It's a swing and a miss for me, but yeah, I think he may talk later on this week. I did get to see him practice a little bit, and it's funny. Different color jersey, same number, same build, same. It's Richie. I mean, it's funny. John Gruden was asked about him a bunch of times, including by me today, and he said, "Well, when Richie decided to stop playing, he wasn't a good player. He was a great player. He was a Pro Bowler, and they think they can get that back at age. What is he now? 36, maybe." And a lot more over the dam, so to speak. I don't know if he'll be that same player. Taking football and certainly all the issues he's had to work through may have taken his toll. But in the very, very brief time that I laid eyes on him today, he looked like the same old guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think everything you need to know is in that quote that you just mentioned from John Gruden, because you know, it's the same old story. If you're talented, even if you're troubled, they'll take a chance on you. And Richie Incognito has gotten plenty of chances, including now in Oakland with the Raiders. Okay, so you mentioned the Golden State Warriors gear in the airport. Obviously, Kevin Durant's likely torn Achilles has been the story from Game 5, even more so than the actual outcome. I feel terrible for him. Where do you reside on the debate about trying to place blame for his injury?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Kevin Durant's a grown man. And I know he's probably getting some pressure internally. He was definitely getting pressure externally to play. But at the end of the day, he's a grown man and had a responsibility for his own actions. So, yeah, I have sympathy for him. I certainly feel bad that, you know, it came to that. But do I think it's the GM's fault? Do I think it's Steve Kerr's fault? Do I think it's the teammate's fault? They may have put the idea in his head to play and rush back a little too soon. At the end of the day, Kevin Durant knows the lay of the land. He's 30 years old. He's a multiple-time MVP, multiple-time NBA and Finals MVP. He at some point asked us to push back and say no if he doesn't feel ready. And by all accounts, I don't think we've heard from Kevin himself, but all accounts, he thought he was ready to go, and sometimes these things happen in life.
Yes, I'm with you. Although we've heard now Charles Barkley came out and is criticizing the Warriors, saying they should protect the player from himself, all this other stuff. But I tend to agree with you on that, Bees, that, you know, at the end of the day, if it's Durant's call. Like, you know, there's a certain process where if medically they rule him out, then he doesn't have a control over that. But if he's cleared and he still doesn't feel comfortable with playing, heck, Kawhi Leonard spent almost an entire season on the sideline in San Antonio because he didn't feel comfortable coming back. So we've seen guys do it before. That's not the finals, and there's a lot of pressure, but I do think that there's a lot of factors there, and Durant ultimately had the final say. With that being said, how confident are you now in Toronto's ability to actually close this thing out?
Oh, not at all. I mean, last night was their moment. You know me, I was sound asleep midway through the third quarter, even out here on the West Coast. But, you know, watching the highlights, reading the recaps, you got a six-point lead at home with 3 minutes to go, championship right there for the taking. And you blow it, you score 2 points the rest of the way, that's your moment. I mean, I don't think anyone would be surprised if Golden State comes out and plays great on Thursday and wins on their home court. They haven't won on their home court yet this series, right? They lost both their home games. They're not. I can't see them going 0-3 at home in the NBA Finals. They're going to probably win Game 6. So then it's Game 7. And I'll ask you, Greg, who do you like in Game 7?
I mean, I agree with you that Game 6 likely to go the Warriors' way, and then Game 7, I mean, that's a crapshoot, man. I mean, you go from the Raptors having all this momentum, clearly controlling the series, to then the pressure squarely on. They do have an advantage of being at home, but I'm with you. If you're talking about championship medal and experience and the momentum of the Warriors staring down a 3-1 deficit and turning into a winner-take-all one-game scenario, you have to think Golden State feels really good about it. And a lot of people will feel that they have the best chance to win a Game 7 scenario.
The way they came back last year against the Rockets, and I know Durant was healthy and played in that series, but you know, facing, you know, imagine the recriminations there would have been last year if they would have lost the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. They didn't. They rose to the occasion, won the last two games, and advanced to the NBA Finals. Even after the 3-1 debacle to the Cavs, they came back and steamrolled Cleveland the next year. They have it, man. They know how to put together championship-level play at championship-level times. And that's why I would not – Toronto's got to be – sick to their stomachs today. We saw how Drake left the floor and kind of was having a hissy fit and nearly on the verge of tears after the loss last night. He's got to be the emoji for all of Toronto Raptors fans and maybe even the organization because, I mean, last night was their shot. And again, they're going to get another home game. They lose on Thursday, and I understand that home teams usually win Game 7. But you just mentioned it, and I couldn't have said it better. A championship pedigree that they have in Golden State, it's going to be tough to beat them. I really do think it's going to be tough.
And it sets up perfectly for the NBA. They love all this. A potential Game 7, this is perfect for business if you're the league. Adam Beasley joining the program here, of course, covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. All right, Bees, let's get to the Miami Dolphins. You have produced a lot of great content over the last week or so, courtesy of the Miami Herald. And you tweeted that Devontae Parker was the Dolphins' best offensive player in the offseason workout program. You have an article to complement that as well. Where have we seen this before, I would ask you? Because I'm concerned, Bees, that this is like a recurring theme with Devontae Parker. He looks great when it doesn't matter. And then when it does matter, where is number 11?
I feel like Charlie Brown, you know, charging the football and Lucy's just about to yank it away and I'm going to fall on my ass. I mean, I feel like that's what's going to happen here. But I am going to be that guy and say, Devontae looked really, really good. I mean, like the best receiver the Dolphins have good. And I know we had Albert Wilson wasn't out there and Kenny Stills has been a little banged up, but he has been consistently their best offensive player this spring. And you mentioned, you know, deja vu all over again. Well, yeah, we've said this seems like two or three times before and it hasn't translated. And so the question is, why is this year different? I mean, he is, you know, 7-time gold medalist in the underwear Olympics, it seems like, you know, but you put those pads on and something changes. Well, here's what could be different, Greg. He's playing for a new coach that clearly has some level of trust in him in a way that Adam Gase didn't, because the Dolphins could have easily just walked from Devontae. No, instead they decided to restructure his contract. He did take a pay cut, but they kept him on for one, if not two more years to prove himself. That, to me, it shows that Brian Flores wants him here, that he thinks that he can flourish here, and he can be a good, really good player for the Miami Dolphins. So that's number one. Number two, maybe Devontae will actually get lucky for once and stay healthy. Not, no player in the NFL is completely healthy throughout the season. Everyone's got something to deal with, but he's been snake bit. If it's not the foot, it's the ankle, it's the hamstring. Just because the litany of injuries he's dealt with, maybe he's due some good karma. Maybe, you know, whatever he did in his past life that the gods are taking out of him, maybe the is clear now and he can go ahead and have a good NFL career. And point number three, Greg, why I think this could be different is look who's throwing the football. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Devontae Parker already have a chemistry. It was very clear with 2 60-plus-yard bombs the last day of minicamp. And we don't know if Fitzpatrick or Rosen's going to be the starter, but if it is Fitzmagic, I mean, we saw in Campbell last year, that guy can sling it. He's going to throw it to the wrong team a lot, but he can throw it to his own team a lot, too. And he maybe Jay Cutler has kind of had that same mindset, but I don't think Devontae has really had a quarterback who's just let it rip and can throw the ball downfield the way that we've seen Ryan Fitzpatrick do. So I think personnel-wise, he's set up to succeed as well. Those are the three reasons why I think it could be different. If it will be different, I'm still going to I'm going to hold my fire on that. Wait till they get in the pads and training camp. If he emerges from training camp healthy, productive, then yeah, I'm all on board the Devontae Parker train.
All right. I mean, it sounds good, but yeah, I need to see it to believe it after all these other tease jobs we've had from him. Now, you just mentioned Fitzpatrick and Rosen, and this is a really, really fascinating dynamic, not only because it's the biggest storyline for this team, but also it does feel like there are certain members of the media, colleagues of yours, that have already decided Ryan Fitzpatrick is the starter. I would ask you, though, because I think it's way too early to say that, where do you reside there? I mean, are we going to see a legitimate competition come August when training camp rolls around?
I'll say this. If Josh Rosen was as far ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick as Fitzpatrick is ahead of Rosen, I would call it, because there's all the upside in starting Rosen. So I still think they're going to grade this thing on a little bit of a curve. If they're close, they have all the incentive in the world to play Rosen to see what he's got this year. But right now, it's not close, Greg. I mean, there's a gap between the two. And Fitzpatrick was really, really good in the practices we saw. I think we saw 5 or 6 practices over the course of the spring. And every one of them, he was the best quarterback on the field. But again, like Devontae Parker, where have we heard this before? I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I mean, he's been in the league 17, 18, 23, 34 years, whatever it is. He knows every offense in football. He knows how to throw the no-look pass, which was great. We saw on Dolphins social media. But can he put it together consistently? And so even if he does, Greg, win the week one starting job, history suggests that he's going to have multiple hiccups. He's going to have a 3 or 4 pick game. And if he has enough of those early in the season, the Dolphins start out 2-5, you know, 3-6 even. There's all the incentive in the world to play Rosen down the stretch to see what they have. So my guess is this, both are going to play at some point, either because of injury or ineffectiveness. The question is who gets that week one start. I'm not ready to call it at this point. I certainly know Brian Flores isn't ready to call it. We haven't seen a single snap in the preseason. We haven't seen anything with the pads on. But Rosen, who I'm going to go down and see if I can talk to some of his people this week, he's got his work cut out for him. My guess is he knows he has his work cut out for him to win that starting job.
Yeah, it's going to – I think still the story is to be written, but I'm with you. Like, I understand Fitzpatrick's well ahead at this point, and looking forward to seeing what you find out in L.A. Adam Beasley's joining us here, covers the Dolphins, of course, for the Miami Herald. All right, I got to admit, I cringed when I read Micah Fitzpatrick's quotes in your article regarding the communication or lack thereof from the previous coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball. I guess first thing is, does that tell us all we need to know about how things operated under the previous regime?
Whew. Well, it certainly gives us – I don't think it forgets what Rashad Jones did, but it certainly explains a little bit of what what Rashad Jones did, because there wasn't an outpouring of respect, I would say, for Matt Burke in that locker room. And Minka, he isn't a look-at-me kind of guy. He is, I mean, he'll give you an honest answer, but he's not trying to showboat. He's not trying to show anyone up. And for him to essentially take a blowtorch to his defensive coordinator like that, I don't have the exact quotes up, but maybe you do, but essentially it was, I feel like even though I can't focus on one position this year, I want to be so much better because we're not going to be making it up as we go along.
Right.
And that's essentially what he said Matt Burke did. Like, it would change day to day what they thought his role would be, not game to game, but like midway through the week, he suggested they would just scrap plans and go another way. And that's really hard for a rookie, man. I know he played a lot of different positions at Alabama, but he's still about 22, 23 years old at that time. And he's playing against by far the best competition he's ever seen in his life. So cut the dude a break. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's very telling as to what went wrong. There are a lot of things that went wrong over the last 2 years. But more than anything, I don't think the coaching staff, the past coaching staff, maximized the players they had. I don't think they had great plans for their skill sets, and I don't think they utilized them in a way they should. So, if I was Matt Burke and I read those comments, I wouldn't feel particularly good about myself.
No, and I'm with you there. And I think that my other takeaway, at least I'm trying to be optimistic about all this, Beast, because there's been plenty of negativity over the last decade or so with the Dolphins. But I'm hoping, and I actually feel pretty confident, that the new coaching staff will utilize Minka in different ways, but also maximize what he can do and really get the best out of him and his versatility.
No, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of guys they're going to do that with. And, you know, Bob McCain might end up playing safety because it's the best way to utilize his skill and get everybody on the field. And maybe, you know, I don't know, Kenyon Drake will be utilized in the right way, getting him the ball in space. I don't know if you needed him to be a volume back, but certainly the way, you know, don't run it up the middle and you know, crash your head into the line when you've got breakaway speed. There are a lot of different players that have not flourished. Charles Harris, another perfect example. He was a three-point stance guy, four-point stance guy his entire career, and has had three sacks to show for it. Maybe stand him up and let him get in the space, come and go, and see what you get out of him. It's all good stuff, man. I think there's the makings of a pretty good nucleus already on this roster. The issue is, you know, adding to that nucleus because they're not nearly close enough yet, and developing those players they have. And the last couple of years have kind of just been, you know, hamster wheel. You're running really hard, but you don't get anywhere with them.
That's for sure. All right, I'll leave you with this, Beast, and I appreciate your time as always. The NFL has announced tonight that Hard Knocks will be chronicling the training camp of the Oakland Raiders officially.
How about that?
You were just there, and yeah.
That was the topic du jour. They were peppering John Gruden about it. He was cursing out his brother Jay for lobbying for the Raiders to get it. He probably knew. I'm sure he did know. He had a good poker face letting the league announce it. Look, I mean, the characters that are on that team are just great. I mean, AB is going to be a star. I'm sure they're going to go down the Richie path like they did when the Dolphins had it in 2012. They're not the best team in the NFL, but they're certainly one of the most interesting. I'd say they and Cleveland are the two most interesting teams. And the Browns have a new coach, so they don't have to do Hard Knocks. It made sense with the Raiders. The only reason I would have, you know, pumped the brakes on Oakland this year is because next year when they move to Las Vegas, could you imagine the glitz and glamour that's going to be at training camp? You know, beggars can't be choosers. I'm definitely going to tune in because I got to see handles those personalities because there are some massive personalities in that locker room.
Oh, man, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm with you on that completely. Hey, Beast, thanks so much for the time, as always. Safe travels out in California, and we'll catch up with you again when you're back in South Florida, all right?
Sounds good, bud.
All right, there he is, Adam Beasley, joining us from out in the Oakland Bay Area, not covering the NBA Finals, but instead covering some mini camps on the West Coast. Appreciate his time, as always. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at Adam H. Beasley, and read his work in the Miami Herald. All right, we got a lot to get into. We're going to come back, get to the 7 o'clock hour, reset some of the information about the NBA Finals, and read some of your texts as well. Stay tuned here on 560 WQAM.